Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Now, you don't know this, and she doesn't really know this, but my next guest has an ongoing commitment and impact on All Marine Radio, and her name is Major Lauren Serrano, and she came on All Marine Radio a couple years ago, and we were talking about something she had written, but in the course of meeting her, Lauren is the one that got me interested in the USS Johnson and the Battle of Samar, and that continues to echo through All Marine Radio. And I have done a bunch of programs about that. I'm trying to get Mr. James Hornfisher on to talk about all the research that he's done and did about that battle. Because when you read the book, it's incredible choreography, literary choreography, because this fight is going on multiple ships simultaneously, right? There's a Japanese perspective, an American perspective, and then the perspective of each ship, and then the perspective of the individual people on those ships. And Hornfisher does a masterful job. So anyway, this is really the person that animated me beyond people telling me, hey, this is a good book, you should read it, which I hear all the time. But so I want to welcome back to All Marine Radio, Major Lauren Serrano. So Lauren, first of all, thanks for doing this. Welcome home.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
All right. So I want to outline for everybody how we meet. We meet because you wrote an article entitled what?
The one about why women should not be in the infantry?
Yes.
Or the one about gender crisis and being a mom in the military? Both of them.
So we meet the first time about the article as the Marine Corps is going down the road of gender integration. Lauren wrote an article on the way flying back, if I remember, from Okinawa. Right? That was entitled Why Women Shouldn't Be in the Infantry. So she came on, we talked about that. And then she wrote subsequent to that, I think, right? The second one was, you know, she'd had children, I think a couple of them. And, you know, and I think she raised a significant question based on what was going on at the time. Is there still a place in the Marine Corps for somebody who doesn't want to be a grunt, doesn't want to, is it okay to be a woman in the Marine Corps? And I thought, and that was a pretty interesting conversation we had. And so Lauren is a bit of a thinker and not afraid to write. And then recently somebody said, hey, Mac, Lauren Serrano's writing again, and she's evolved her position on life, and you need to get a hold of her. So I did, and this is the culmination of those efforts. And so we're going to have a bit of a discussion about Lauren's evolution. So, Lauren, with all that said, first of all, was most of it accurate?
Pretty accurate. Yes, although you give me more credit than what I deserve, probably.
All right. Well, that's all right. We are in public, after all. So talk to us about your most recent writing. And how have you evolved as a human being?
Wow, that's a really big question that you did not provide to me ahead of time, so I'm speaking on the fly here.
That's all right.
Well, really, since I wrote that initial article 6 or 7 years ago about my position on why I thought women shouldn't be in the infantry, I have not been able to escape it. Like, at the time, I was a brand new captain. You know, a lot had been going on in my life. I was just coming back from Iraq. I had some really terrible experiences my first tour in the Marine Corps, and I was just an angry young female captain, and had a very myopic view of gender integration and the Marine Corps, and I didn't understand what was going on in the Beltway back in Washington from my fighting hole over in Iraq and in Okinawa. And so I wrote about it. I love writing. I've been writing all my whole life. I wrote a lot in college too as well. So that was not unique that I wrote about it. But what was unique was the reaction to it and my inability to escape it throughout my career. So having been, you know, a female, taking a stance against having female in the infantry was not necessarily popular with some people, with a really loud group of people who were all for gender integration. It was extremely popular with other groups in the Marine Corps. So I kept getting approached by so many people. Over the last 6 years or so, I've had so many invites for speaking engagements, or, you know, I check into a new unit and everybody seems to know who I am, has already read some of the things I've written, already thinks they know who I am. Every time I go to a hail and farewell, it somehow comes up. And so I've been thinking about these topics a lot these last 6 or 7 years as the situation has evolved, as politics has changed, as the situation in my life has changed, as I've become a mother, as I've become an older Marine. You know, in my mid-30s now, I'm considered old.
Don't even go there with me, all right? So just shut your yap relative to that one.
But still, I think one of the things that frustrated me the most was that people will sometimes judge you based off of who you were a decade ago as opposed to who you are now. And so many times I've checked into a unit recently or in the last few years, and people think they know my politics. They think I know who I am at the core. They think they know me because of an opinion I held at one point in my mid-20s when I was going through something really terrible. And so I wrote about it because that's what I do. I write. I love writing. And I had some really unique experiences the last half decade or so because of my writing. Like, meeting the president was really cool. People like to hear about that story, how I got to the presidential town hall, how I got to watch the Senate hearing on Marines United and how that's changed my life. Talked to many very senior Marine officers, and general officers about this particular topic. People are always asking and commenting about it, so I wrote about it. It's mixed emotions. I don't regret what I did, but I definitely don't like being held to my same thoughts that I was, who I was a decade ago. I still believe in some things, but my thoughts have definitely evolved and changed, especially since my follow-on tour after being in Iraq and Okinawa was in the Beltway, where I had a totally different perspective of politics and kind of larger Marine Corps, dealt with headquarters Marine Corps for the first time, and that was an interesting beast. And so, I learned and changed and had some other unique experiences, so I wrote about it. Really, that's it. Nothing super special.
Okay, so what changed? How has your perspective changed?
About gender integration or just about life?
Well, let's start with life, and then we'll go to gender integration.
So with life, I think just big lessons in life was it's okay to have an opinion. How you articulate that opinion is important. And it's okay to have different opinions than your friends, your family, those around you, as long as you respect their opinion and they respect yours, and you can have a mature professional debate about those opinions.
Okay, stop. Stop right there. So is that your experience? Because, you know, starting from the time that you first wrote, right? You should listen to these interviews that I've done with Lauren. They're good because she's obviously bright and she's not afraid to have an opinion. But when you hear her she writes an opinion piece, and then there's people that are coming to get her to be parts of forums. There's people that are telling her, this is what you have to say, this is what you can't talk about, and then she becomes part of this national dance, right? And, oh, by the way, she's a Marine officer on active duty. So that is a fairly intricate needle to try to thread, and let alone, you know, then discuss her opinions in an articulate way. So grown-up, articulate, respectful discourse, are you finding that any place other than on All Marine Radio?
Yes and no. There's definitely some terrible human beings out there that are just looking to tear people down for whatever reason. I don't know what pleasure they get in criticizing and being cruel. And that's something that I'll never be able to control. None of us will, but it's something that I've learned is never going away, no matter what you talk about. So you just have to ignore it. I mean, I wrote an article one time in college about the Kurds and how the need to have a Kurdistan, an independent Kurdish nation. This was back in the mid-2000s. And this woman who completely did not agree with my opinion tore me apart in front of this auditorium about how I don't know anything about Kurdish politics in the Middle East. And, you know, she was a very mean person. So no matter the topic, you know, there's going to be people out there that disagree with you. But the forms in which you engage are really important. Don't sink to those people's level, because it's endless. What is it going to do? What do you get by engaging with people who are going to be cruel or who are not going to have mature debates? And I did get dragged into, I prevented myself from getting dragged. I avoided the temptation of getting dragged into, you know, like online blogs and responding to critics who post nasty things on, you know, the comment section of newspaper articles and stuff like that. And I think what caught me the most about this particular situation is at the time the debate was open, my opinion was shared by so many Marines and still is by a lot of Marines. And I wrote about it in the Professional Marine Journal for Marine Officers. That was the audience for Marine Officers and Enlisted. The audience was not think tanks, was not the feminist groups, was not, you know, the trolls online or, you know, nasty individuals who don't partake in the military. It was an open debate, an open conversation with my peers, with fellow Marines at the time. And I was surprised how many people who are not in the Marine Corps read the Gazette or, you know, somehow found my article when those people were never the audience. The audience was to share.
Well, hold on. I want you just to share one little part of that. So Lauren, she sends this piece to the Gazette, right?
Yes.
Right. And she gets a call from a friend who says, what, you're trending on Facebook or Twitter, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So at the time, yeah, I didn't even know what that was. I was kind of in shock. So the day it was published, I didn't even know it was getting published that day. I got just bombarded with emails and phone calls and Facebook messages everywhere. And at the time, it was before my husband and I had children, and we were doing the young couple thing and sharing our home with another young couple at home in D.C. because it's so expensive there. And so it was actually my roommate. So my roommate Ben comes home and he goes, Lauren, you're trending on Facebook. This is so cool. And then he starts Googling me, and it's got that little like arrow trend sign thing next to my name, and I was like, what is that? And just the overwhelming mix of emotions was just like just crushing. Like, I was not prepared to experience being trending, like trending anywhere. I'm not popular, like I'm not famous, like I don't come from anywhere where like my name should be trending somewhere. And so that overwhelming like emotion was just kind of immediately like, what have I done?
Okay, now let me ask you, in retrospect, was that an overall positive or negative experience?
Negative.
You know, negative. This is, I'll just tell you, my dad was manager of Major League Baseball. He was a manager of the Boston Red Sox when they lost the 1986 World Series. He was drugged through the streets, right, for that. And there were people that lied about what happened in the World Series. And the reason Almarine Radio is, I like to call it a liberal arts with a lot of profanity and sense of humor. But it has incredible respect and believes in the truth is because of that experience, because it was so negative. And I watch people just tell lies and just be absolutely brutal just for, in my opinion, just for kicks, just for ratings, just to tear somebody down, and it was not anywhere close to being the truth. And so people say, well, why are you so adamant about this? Why? Because of the horrible experience that I watched my father go through, becoming the village idiot that was predicated on a whole series of lies. Because people in the media, you know, this is before the internet, thank God. But that experience was so negative, it colors the way I do this to this day. And what I love about what I do is a liberal arts forum in which you have a articulate, footnoted discussion about anything. And to me, people love that, and they want that. But it doesn't happen too much because these other broad overarching themes dominate everything we do, politics being one of them. It's interesting that we have similar experiences relative to national media and attention, and that colors the way I think both of us view the world. Interesting.
It is. It's like I wasn't looking for any kind of national attention by any means. Heck, I was just some captain writing for the Gazette, which is a common thing people do in the Marine Corps. And all of a sudden I'm trending online, and I was totally not prepared for it. That's not something I ever wanted to do or thought was going to be in my life. And it was overwhelmingly negative. Even though I had for every 100 people who called or emailed me to congratulate me or tell me that they agreed with my opinion or thank you for being honest and real and candid and raw, for every 100 of those people, that one negative person got to me more than all those 100 people together. And I just like, as soon as Ben told me that I was trending, I went out and Googled my own name, and I was like in shock. I just started sobbing and was like, my career is over. I'm going to get NJP. The Marines is horrible. Like, why did I do this? Like, I just had no idea what I was doing. And it was scary.
That's just a sidebar to kind of the window into, you know, how that happens. And so let me take you back to what you were saying. And that is, you know, trying to find, you know, forms in which your opinions can evolve. Now, 'cause I will tell you this, I mean, I've been doing radio, between deployments and before I retired since 2000. If you dialed up some of my opinions in 2000 and then dialed up my opinions now, they're vastly different. They're vastly different. So how have you, so as you're, and we'll get to the issue itself, but do you find people receptive to the discussion, or are they simply interested in your end state and using it for their own benefit?
I think it's a combination. Depends on who I'm talking to, the situation, and what it is, really. It just totally depends. I've had so many different mixed situations that have evolved because of this, but I still just get frustrated that we can't have open debate and dialogue, and something like, I would consider the Marine Corps Gazette as like a place to have those discussions and that dialogue. And if it's not a safe space, some safe like area to have opinions, then where is, like, I don't know.
Well, I would submit to you that if you can't do it as a professional in the Marine Corps Gazette, and let me tell you, if you can't have an honest, respectful discussion in that forum, then you're right. Then where does it exist? And if you can't, then I guess the more fundamental question is, why can't you? Why can't we as professionals entertain that, entertain any idea. We can't do that. And if that's a fact, then what are the implications of that for the institution? That's not good.
I think we can have those kind of conversations and debate. We just need to be prepared for them. And that's what I wasn't. I wasn't prepared for it. I thought it was going to be, you know, a very internal Marine Corps dialogue, that it was a safe space, that I'd talk just with my own community and peers. And then it turns out that wasn't the case. So there's just going into that with eyes wide open and knowing that there's going to be political groups or individuals that are going to take that and use it for their own purposes, or, you know, morph your opinions in some way, shape, or form, is just, it's an unfortunate reality of it. It doesn't mean we shouldn't have these conversations. I mean, you should be as scared to put out your opinion.
But
it's just something you need to go in with eyes wide open. And I did that with this second article that I just published a couple months ago. Like, even as I was getting ready to publish, I was like, oh dear God, do I really want to do this again? Like, who's going to rip me apart? Like, am I going to, you know, have all sorts of trolls? Like, he's sending me hate mail. Like,
the answer to all that is yes, 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 yes.
That's what,
right?
I mean. So like, it's going to happen. So like, what's better? Just don't ever say anything. Don't have an opinion. Don't engage, because somebody somewhere is going to, you know, attack you. No, the answer is have courage. Put out your opinions. Make sure they're thoughtful, respectful, and that you worked through what it is that you think and why. But you still need to have them. And that's where thought leaders come into place. That's where activists come into place for the right reasons. Like, you have to be vulnerable in order to make a difference and in order to
grow,
move the ball forward.
Right.
And so just learning my own vulnerability and what that does to me emotionally, how that's affected me professionally, has been a really big learning point this last half decade or so. And I just realized that it's okay if people don't like me. It's okay if people don't like my opinions. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to get scared and to have anxiety over these things. But I'd rather have all of those, the good, bad, and the ugly, than be irrelevant, than have been too scared to ever put my neck out there. And then next thing you know, I'm 85 years old on my deathbed, and I look back and I say, wow, I was too scared to ever make a difference in life.
Yeah, if you open that drawer over there, there's like 36 articles that I've written and never published. You know, I wish I would have published those. But again, it's one thing to think about it and to sketch it out and blah, blah, blah. It's another thing, though, to do it in public. And,
yeah, and it's right? scary to put yourself in public, like, because you're leaving yourself open for attack from all sides. And
yeah, but you know what? If you get really good at telling people to fuck off, then it's all good, right? But that's hard. And I would tell you this. I do this every day, and I speak in public a fair amount. But criticism still bothers me, especially substantive criticism. And mm-hmm. and so and I'm like everybody, I'm impacted by that as well. And so I'm, you know, I've learned over the course of years, you know, to try to be well thought in spite of my profanity, and to try to, you know, be, you know, circumspect in my views. In fact, I'll just give you an example. I got an email last night, because he's in Australia, but we had a conversation about really the stunning news coming out of San Diego that arson is suspected as the cause of the fire on the USS Bonhomme Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Stunning news, even for a Navy that we've watched struggle here in for a long time in terms of leadership and whatnot. I had people that sent me emails that weren't – they hadn't got to anger yet. They were just stunned by the news. Yet his admonition was this: hey, be careful, because the Navy bungled the investigation into the explosion on the USS Iowa. and it was an absolute shit show of an investigation. So everybody should slow their roll and wait for the facts and wait for the facts to be scrutinized, because sometimes they get this shit wrong. And I thought, whoa. Now that's wisdom, right? And when you do this in public on a regular basis, I think it takes a while to grow into that. And now some people don't, because you do get abused, and there are idiots out there. And I think you have to find a way to shut that stuff off in your life. And if you're going to be somebody who wants to participate in the debate, be comfortable with, yeah, they're out there. Substantive people know how to get a hold of me. And I'm more than willing to discuss these things with anybody. But the one thing I'm not going to do, I'm not going to descend in the back alleys of the internet and dignify fools, you know, with my time. That's kind of an acquired skill, yay or nay?
Absolutely, it's acquired. And I think you have to go through one of these emotionally painful situations to get there. But like you said, don't go searching on the internet and the back alleys for those trolls, because they're there. They will always be there, and they'll drag you down with them. But I think going through being the target of extreme criticism for some of these things has taught me to be more humble, more kind, to be a better listener for other people with their emotions and their opinions, especially the ones I don't agree with, to maybe understand where they're coming from. And instead of being hard-headed or judging them for one opinion that they have and judging them in their entirety for that one opinion, I think I've learned to be a lot more open and kind to others, because that's what I've found has helped me, is when people who've disagreed with my opinion still want to be my friend or want to treat me well or with respect. Like for instance, one of my best friends in the Marine Corps, she's out of the Marine Corps now, but she did a couple tours, got out as a captain, but she has a complete opposite opinion than I do on a lot of like female integration stuff. And we've kind of agreed to disagree, to be respectful of each other and be kind to one another, despite our deep, opinions that are opposite. And that's been really helpful for me to know that I'm not going to lose that friendship just because we disagree on this particular one issue. So,
all right, let's talk about your evolution on the issue of gender integration. So, first of all, I mean, one of the things I've always enjoyed about having you on, Lauren, is, you know, you're an articulate, well thought person who I think enjoys the intellectual discussions, and I've always enjoyed them and found having you on thought provoking. So talk to me about before you tell me about your evolution. So would you categorize the overall experience of writing? Is it overall positive or overall negative?
Overall positive. I've written a dozen or so various things throughout my life, not just on gender integration. That's actually least amount of the topics I've talked about. But I love writing. I will always be a writer. I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. When I retire from the Marine Corps, I'm probably going to be a writer full time. I love it. That's me. And so for me, writing is a form of therapy as well. Writing about my thoughts, my feelings. Right now, I always have at least a dozen articles that are half written on my computer desktop or so. The next article I'm writing here soon is about my command experience this past year and what it was like to lose a Marine to suicide. I'm halfway through that article right now. I'm halfway through a different article I want to write about sexual assault and harassment in the military. So I always have something kind of going. So overall, positive in terms of writing, regardless of how it's received sometimes by others. It's a personal thing.
Got it. Let's talk about gender integration and your evolution on that. So talk to me about the impact of that article. And the way it's been used, and the impact of that on other female members of the U.S. military. That's kind of behind the scenes. You know, we you see the article and we understand the discussion, but then there's a, I think there's a, an experience that you have that none the rest of us don't, which is a woman, a Marine officer, a member of the United States, you know, active component, and then how that article was used maybe as a weapon against other women who were just trying to do it, pursue the career they wanted to pursue. Talk to me about that impact on you. What was that like?
I mean, it was really hard because I never wanted to hurt any Marine individually, any female Marine individually, for her particular endeavors or her desires or goals, hopes, dreams, whatever. Like, to me, it was more of an academic discussion, more practical discussion. It came at it more from an academic perspective. And so I never meant to crush anybody's dreams, and I'm sorry that it came across like that to some women. And that really hit me at a Officer Women's Leadership Symposium in D.C. a year or two after I wrote the article, where there was a female captain there who was an instructor at TBS, and she was telling me about these young lieutenants, these female young lieutenants who are all volunteering for IOSD, volunteering to go into ground combat units, and how it crushes her when they don't get those MOSs when they want them, or that they're just really defeated by the fact that some other women won't support them. And so that crushed me, especially having not always had the best female peers. I never wanted to be that to other people. My first duty station in Okinawa, where there were four of us women in my MOS, it was a brand new MOS for women. And two of the four of us were not welcoming individuals, I'll say that. They were the kind of women who are very catty and didn't play nice with others, and that still stings me to this day that I was never able to become friends with those two women, and it hurt me that they didn't support me, and despite trying to reach out with them in an olive branch, they didn't want anything to do with me, whereas the other woman, she's one of my best friends today still. But yeah, I never wanted to be that kind of woman that would tear down somebody else or would, you know, crush their hopes and dreams. And so realizing that I had been that for some was really painful. And I regretted that that's how it came off to some of them. But at the same time, I was not meaning to approach it on an individual level. I was trying to think about it from an institutional perspective, what it does to mission readiness and combat effectiveness. Because at the end of the day, we're in the military service in order to crush our enemies and defend our nation. We're a national security entity. We're not here to appease individual people's hopes and dreams. We're here to win. So reconciling those two is always really difficult. Did I sidebar? What was the rest of your question?
No. That's all right. This is like sidebar on top of sidebar on top of sidebar. But that's all right.
I'm also like sitting in a coffee room right now in the Naval Academy because I don't have a desk that has
No, it's all
in behind me, eavesdropping, and so it's distracting.
It's all good. So talk to me about the evolution of your evolution on ground combat integration.
Well, okay. I want to start off by saying that I'm in full support of what we're doing right now with integration because the decision has been made. Our Commandant and the Joint Chiefs and the Department of Defense made a decision several years ago. And even though at the time I didn't support it, personally, my personal opinions don't matter. When the debate is over, the debate is over, and we march in the same direction. So it's okay to still have those opinions, but I will not voice my opinions anymore because the debate's done, and I don't want to do things that's not in concert with the direction the military is going because I don't see any benefit to that. So anything I disagree with, I've just like sit down, shut up, close my mouth. It's like the time for debate has passed.
I just want to say that, you know, and that is that should be the default position of every professional officer. Like, you know, the debate is the debate until you get to the salute point. And then somebody makes it, right? And then
I wrote that article, the debate was open, right. And since then it has shut. So I no longer talk about the topic itself. I actually sent my article, my most recent article, out to a couple of peers before it got published just to get their thoughts ahead of time to make sure I wasn't a complete idiot. And one of them was really pressuring me to talk about the gender integration piece, the topic itself, not just the situation that I found myself in. And I looked at him and I was just like, I don't want to bring it up again. I'm not trying to dig up an old topic when the decision has been made. We've moved on from that particular topic itself. I'm purely sharing my reflections and my experience having gone through a unique situation because of it. So I don't want to dig that up. I will share maybe some of the personal evolution that that I think is relevant that I will talk to Marines about these days. But when I originally wrote the article, I was very junior. I was a brand new captain. I had just come back from a combat deployment in Iraq, and I had some extremely negative experiences, both at my unit in Okinawa and in Iraq, mostly because of my gender, misogyny, sexual assault and harassment, as well as consensual sexual issues throughout the units I was in. And I'm there in Okinawa and in Iraq listening to this ongoing debate back in Washington about integrating women into the infantry. And I'm sitting there getting harassed. I had somebody on my combat deployment, you know, express his undying love for me. And despite the fact that he was married with three children back home and significantly older than me, and that caused a lot of issues. There were a couple other like senior officers that were screwing around when we were deployed, they caused a lot of issues. And like, gender matters when you're in a combat zone, and being in a combat environment is incommunicable to people who've never been there before. And so I'm sitting here in Iraq listening to these debates going like, why on earth are these people in Washington who have never been to a combat zone, have no idea what it's like to be a junior female in the service, let alone the Marine Corps, let alone an MOS that just opened to women within the last year, and I'm getting, you know, shit on left and right. Why on earth would they do this, you know? So that was kind of my mindset. I had a very myopic mindset, and it was a painful first tour for me in the Marine Corps. And I remember coming back from that deployment in Iraq too, where gender did play a role in my success in the Middle East, because as a female human intel person that speaks Arabic, I was able to go to the northern parts of Iraq and answer some RFIs, some requests for information from female Peshmerga units that we had previously been unable to answer because we just didn't have any females that were even allowed near the female Peshmerga units that could get this kind of information. So I saw firsthand how gender mattered and how it is important to have women in the military with special capabilities and skills, but it didn't translate to me how infantry was like necessarily the answer. And I came back from that deployment to Okinawa, and within my first week or so, I was awarded the Bronze Star from my unit in Iraq, and it was uncomfortable for me to get an award that I thought was too high for my particular rank, because, you know, the military, they usually, you know, your rank coincides with the kind of award you get. So I felt awkward about that, and then it solidified when a fellow Marine officer there in my unit turned to me and said, "So how many dicks did you suck in Iraq to get that award?" You know, just like, awesome. Thanks for believing in me, you know, and thinking that we made a difference. And so I was just in a really negative mindset. And that's the time period in which I was thinking about gender integration. You know, my battalion commander had actually been relieved for sleeping with the first sergeant, the female first sergeant during that period as well. And I had been on the jury duty for a special court martial for rape on the Mew, and it was just like I could not escape gender issues in the military. And then from that duty station, I left and went to DC, went to the Beltway and experienced it and saw what was going on, and that's when the Marines United thing happened. And I followed that really closely as well and started realizing that removing women from the equation was not necessarily the answer. Maybe it was integrating them. Maybe it was integrating them respectfully, smartly, in the right ways, in the right units with the right people around them so that men could see the greatness in gender integration and the things that women could bring to the table. So maybe some of those negative experiences that I had my first tour won't happen to others if they're exposed to integration from an earlier stage or from a better perspective. And so I learned that by being in the Beltway and being in joint environment where there were a lot more women, and then having children during that time too definitely changed my perspective. I have a son and a daughter, and I care very deeply about them being good citizens of the world and growing up thinking that men are not necessarily better than women. They're not interchangeable, but they are equal in different ways. And so wanting to be a model citizen for them definitely had an impact on me as well. All right, I think I've gone down one of those rabbit holes that you said I'm so good at going down.
So I want to ask you, what advice would you give somebody who's walking down this path years after you, based on your own experience? Because, you know, some of the things you talk about, you know, when men talk about this issue, they don't have to deal with any of that, right? They don't have to deal with it. And I'll just, sadly, you're not the first woman who's come on this program and said that when they were promoted or when they were given an award, that somebody looked at them and said, how many dicks did you suck to get that? I mean, and that's the sad reality for women, certainly in the Marine Corps. And I don't know a whole lot of women in the other branches, but I would say that's not something that's foreign to anybody's ears. So there's a layer of this in this discussion that men don't even deal with. And so what advice do you give to, you know, young female officers about going down this path? Because they have the same aspirations. I will tell you that my view of gender integration has changed, you know, and I've thought about this along the lines. I've thought about my own, you know, feelings about gay marriage. I was doing a radio show, and one day I said, okay, I want somebody to call in and articulate for me, without using the Bible as one of the minor premises, the national interest for a nation that has a constitution that says life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, of regulating gender in a marriage. Mm-hmm. And nobody could do it, right? They would call up and somebody tried to make the argument about public health. And I said, yeah, okay, not so much, but okay. And so I said, I want your major premise, the minor premise, and the conclusion that outlines the public interest in outlawing this. And the answer is there was none. And so to me, that argument echoed into my head as I considered, right, gender integration. So in a nation that says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, how do you ban a gender? Well, in theory, we don't do that. In theory, we have standards that everybody has to meet, standards that we don't come off of, and that's the way it's supposed to work. Now, I'll tell you, trying to be an infantry officer as a female is not an easy road to go down, and I think a lot of women are going to get physically broken attempting to do that, but that's their choice in their life, and none of us, I don't think, have the right to say you can't do that. If they could do the work, then they should be allowed to do the work. And so my opinions have changed. And I have friends that tell me I'm full of shit and there's a morale component to this and you're rolling the dice with the nation's security and all of that. But, you know, I believe what I believe. But there's an aspect of this that we don't deal with, and therefore I don't think we understand. And those are the things that you've been talking about. So given your vast experience now at this, you know, multiple iterations, what advice do you give, you know, young younger women as they head down this road of, you know, their hopes and dreams and maybe wanting to write about it? Is there any advice you give them?
Sure. I could probably talk to women for days and days and days on end about this, but really it boils down to, you know, be a teammate, be a team player, be authentic, do what makes you happy, but also do it for the team. I, like you, I don't always understand why some women would want to do things like infantry where they're already setting themselves up at a disadvantage. But if that's what they want to do and that's what's going to make them happy and that's what they believe will make them the best team player possible, then I want to support them. Then, you know, I'll go ahead, you know, pursue. I don't think the number of women that are going to want to do the infantry or do it for 30 years, you know, and sacrifice having children and life and family, if that's what it takes, is a very high number that it's not going to affect national security. No. So why crush hopes and dreams? Like why prevent people from succeeding in life if that's what they want to do? And there's been several women who have passed IOC that have gone out to the fleet and have been in infantry units and artillery units and other MOSs that were previously close to women, and you know what, they're doing great. You know,
well,
I'll
give you a firsthand account on that. My son Patrick, who was in 3-5, he was an evaluator for a company, and they had, and there was a female lieutenant. Now, they become celebrities.
Sure.
Right? They become celebrities. And I have to say, I don't know her, but I read of her. She declined every, I think to her great credibility, she declined every request for interviews that were given to her, because if she wanted to, she could have gone on her own media tour. She did not. And I think all she did was build credibility for herself as a professional by doing that. But that aside, when he was, you know, he was here and we were talking and he looked at me and goes, "Dad, she's good. She's a good lieutenant." And so, you know, that's just from a lieutenant who was there to evaluate them on their McCree or whatever the hell you call that these days. And just a peer who was curious because, you know, everybody had heard about this unicorn, right? So now you want to see the unicorn in business, and got a chance to, and he was impressed. He said, "She's really good. She's one of the best officers in the company." And that's what you want to hear. And I think what I hear you saying, Lauren, is that far be it from you to get in that person's way of their hopes and dreams. And it sounds like that you're actually pained that something that you wrote might in some way, shape, or form have been used to inhibit that, somebody from doing that. Yay or no?
Absolutely, yeah. I've heard great things about her. I haven't met her in person. Some of the lieutenants that have worked with me in the past went to IOC with her and had nothing but amazing things to say. I think she got out of the Marine Corps recently. I want to say I read an article about that or so. But yeah, I mean, she's an example of somebody who beat all odds and has just done amazing things. And it would kill me if I was the person that prevented her from ever, you know, going to IOC and going and being a great lieutenant and being a great infantry officer. And she deserves that. Is she the norm? Not really, but for what is it, 30 women or so have tried to pass IOC now, and there's only been two. Those numbers aren't going to change national security. They're not going to change whether or not we win the next war or not. But what they might change is military culture. What might change is just the inclusivity is now because things are not closed off to women, there might be a more open mind of some people for what women can accomplish. And there might be less misogyny and less, you know, chauvinism and sexism and all that stuff, which I think matters more than, you know, that one infantry female who's not going to make or take the difference between whether or not we win against China. Like, come on now. So, yeah, it was really cool to see her and see her succeed. And I was cheering her on from the sidelines in private over here. Same with some of the other women who are in artillery. It's another MOS that I think has done really well with women integrating into it recently. Right. And so, you know, good on them. congratulations to them. And I love seeing them succeed and seeing them go on and beat the odds. And I think that their courage and their ambition and their strength is going to have tremendous positive impact for the military culture and Marine Corps culture going forward.
So how has been this latest piece? First of all, what's the title of the latest piece?
Oh, you're in the arena.
In the
arena. I don't have it in front of me, so you're putting me to the test. I should have printed that thing out and had it in front of me, and you're asking me all those questions about it.
a Rooseveltian quote.
I love President Roosevelt.
No, I'll tell you what. I mean, when you read him and you see the impact he had on the nation, you talk about somebody who's about as far-sighted as he was nearsighted relative to the things he did for the nation and setting the nation up to expand the middle class, which has been the great strength of the United States. And Theodore Roosevelt did a lot of the reform work that needed to be done. And then he did incredible things like the national park system, stuff like that. So reading about him is incredible. So in the arena, what has the reaction been to that? Did you get called a sellout because you somehow or other, either modified your position or your position grew?
No, I think the overwhelming reaction has been positive, and I had extreme anxiety the day it was published and, the week it was published or so.
Did you trend?
I did. it did trend.
That's awesome. Most people would be so excited to trend, right? And you're like,
I didn't join the Marine Corps to be a public figure, or to put myself out there. It's just kind of like happened because I'm a loudmouth that has opinions and I'm not afraid to share them. It did. But more positively than negatively, actually overwhelmingly positive, because I think so highly of military officers of all branches, especially the Marine Corps. And those are my peers, and those are who I care most about. I was overwhelmingly happy that even people who disagreed or agreed with my original opinion at least recognized the courage it took to put pen to paper, to talk about it, not just the first time, but the second time, and then appreciate that we as military officers are ever evolving, are always thinking, are always challenging our own thoughts, the thoughts of others, looking at things from various perspectives, thinking outside the box. And I am constantly humbled by the other Marine officers that I meet who are able to pick apart arguments academically or think about things from uncomfortable points of view or just have respect for others. And I've definitely felt a shift in military culture the last decade or so, where people are kinder now, but more, maybe it's just because I'm a field grade officer now, and as opposed to like a lieutenant who's always kind of like trying to prove themselves. But a lot of my peers just respect thought, respect academic thought, respect courage, respect the ability to think about things and think about military culture and just care, just care about issues. And so overwhelmingly positive reaction to this one. So that was good to see. I actually haven't personally had anybody send me hate mail this time.
It's coming.
Sure it's there.
It's coming. Don't kid yourself.
I think also, if somebody were to send me hate mail and, post negative things, I don't care. I care, everybody always cares, but, it's going to happen. I'm prepared for it this time, so I didn't cry myself to sleep the night it was published like I did with the first article. Definitely still has a little anxiety. I think that's expected. But overwhelmingly positive. I actually was able to connect with some incredible Marine officers and retired Marine officers who I previously didn't know. One of the gentleman who reached out to me, former battalion commander, retired colonel, and he went through some challenging times. I'm not going to say who it is because then you would know. I'm not going to out him on here, but he was in the public news about a decade or so for some really horrible things that happened in a combat zone. He was dragged through hell because of it, because he was the battalion commander of that unit that had a horrible thing happen overseas. And he reached out to me and we had a wonderful exchange and just kind of shared our emotional experiences of being, you know, kind of in the public's eye. So that was helpful to talk to him and connect with him. And then I had actually a retired four-star general who I hadn't previously talked to reach out to me, and I had a really wonderful phone call conversation with him as well, and it was humbling that, you know, he spent the time to reach out to me and make that connection. I heard some really interesting things from him that he dealt with during his time on active duty service dealing with military culture. So I was able to connect with some really impactful people who have made changes for the Marine Corps. So I don't regret writing this at all. I think it was also therapeutic for me, so that some of those scars from the first time I wrote an article are slowly healing. And for me, like I said in the beginning, writing is something I'm passionate about and something that keeps me grounded. And it's a form of therapy. So getting my thoughts and views out there is something I'm passionate about.
All right. I have a question that I feel like I have to ask you from our second interview. You were posing a question, and the question you posed was, is there a place for a woman who is comfortable being a woman in the Marine Corps? Do you have can you give us an update on that? Do you have an answer for that? Is there a place?
So the short answer is yes. There is. I'm a walking, living example of that. Even though almost every single one of my peers has gotten out of the military, not every single one, but the majority of my female peers that I started ROTC with or went through OCS with or TBS with years ago have all now pretty much gotten out. And they've all pretty much got out when they decided they wanted to have children and start a family. I'm one of the few that stayed in, and I'm actually exceptionally happy that I did, because there is a place for women in this Marine Corps. There's a place for older female women in the Marine Corps. I mean, obviously female women. There's a place for women who want to be mothers, women who want to be spouses in this Marine Corps. And once I embrace that and realize what it is, it's been a positive experience. It's funny because I've talked about how my first tour was really, really terrible. And since then, every single year in the Marine Corps has been better than the last. And I've also become more comfortable in my skin and more comfortable saying, yes, I am a mother and I am a female Marine and I am a wife, and that's okay. And there's a place for me. And even just this week, so I'm sitting here in the Naval Academy. I'm actually in the copier room of a Naval Academy academic building right now because my husband works here. And it's preferences week at the Naval Academy right now, where they have to choose whether or not they want to be a Navy officer or a Naval officer or a Marine. And I've had several female midshipmen connect with me this past week who really just want to know that it's possible that if they choose the Marine Corps, that they can have kids one day and that they can get married one day, but still be a great Marine officer. And looking them in the eyes and saying, hey, I had those questions at 1.2 and you can look what I've done. Look at what other women have done. And like, yes, yes, there is a place for you. Yes, you have to chart it. And you know, it's not always the easy road traveled, but it is possible. And it's been really cool talking to some of these very junior to-be lieutenants soon and see how excited they are to know that they're joining a service that they see longevity in. So, it's good. I got another email this week from a second lieutenant who's out in Camp Pendleton. I actually went and spoke at Intel Schools a few months ago and had lots of sidebar conversations with brand new second lieutenants who were in their MOS school about what it was like to be a female Marine officer, and one of them reached out to me earlier this week and said she'd gotten to Camp Pendleton and she was super excited and everything is going really well, and she wanted to set up a mentorship session to talk about life and stuff and things. And, you know, I only met her for 20 minutes 6 months ago, and, you know, she remembered me, but she was like, hey, there's not very many women out here at Pendleton. I still remember you. I need a mentor. Here, help. And, like, knowing that I'm here for them has been really cool, because I didn't have anybody when I was lieutenant that I felt I could reach out to. So that's cool.
All right. Now, what haven't I been smart enough to ask you about your evolution as a writer, as a human being, as a Marine officer, without which this this discussion wouldn't be complete? Because, and again, I think that you're having to do it in public, given your notoriety, whether you like it or not. It's just a fact of your life, right? And so, to me, and I laughed when you said you used the word loudmouth, because right, because you can't. I mean, if you're going to be true to yourself, you enjoy, you know, articulate discourse, and you don't shy away from it. And so, what haven't I been smart enough to ask you about your public evolution as a professional, that without which this would not be complete?
Oh, geez, that's a tough question.
It's called the general question.
I'm sorry?
It's called the general question.
Okay. I think one of the things I still struggle with is balance, right? Because we touched on this a little bit earlier, but I'm still on active duty. And I love being on active duty, and I'm not getting off anytime soon. So I very much care about being a productive member of the active component and of the service. And I never want my personal opinions to be misrepresented as opinions of the Corps. And it's walking a fine line between having the opinion, being a thought leader, taking the risk to put your thoughts out there, but still maintain, you know, some sort of allegiance to the service and to our leaders, because I would never want to put any of my senior leaders in a position where they'd have to defend the service based off of something stupid that I did or said. And so that's where just knowing the debate and knowing the time to debate and the time to shut up is important. Knowing when there is a place and to say something and when there's not, is important. So it goes back to the recent article that I wrote, like, being in the arena. You need to be in the arena, but be in the arena smartly and professionally. And at the end of the day, it's okay to be wrong. But it's not okay to do anything with ill intentions or to hurt the organization or hurt individual people. I still struggle with that, striking that balance between what opinions is it okay to share and when do I just need to shut up, you know? And I'd say 99% of what the military does anyway is something that I completely agree with. So that's not hard. But it is definitely something to be conscious of, because I don't want to be the token person for, like, hey, you can go out on a limb and, you know, say whatever you want and, you know, go rogue, because that's not discipline. That's not going to be in the best interest of our service. And so I really had to think about, and what is what I'm doing in the best interest of the service while I'm still on active duty? Is this something I should say or can say or want to say? What forum am I sharing this with? Who's the audience? And anything that I think is not productive, doesn't move the ball forward, or will be harmful to my service, my peers, my fellow Marines, the junior Marines, I reserve. I, you know, tuck it away and put it in a pocket and, you know, shut up. Don't say anything. If it's not productive, it's not helping the team, it's not worth saying out loud.
Those are the coordinating instructions, to be wise beyond your years. And I don't think any of us start like that. You know, I think when we start, we're excited to join the debate. Right. And, mm-hmm. And you by virtue of your great intellect and skill, right, you shoot right into the eye of the hurricane, you know, right out of the chute. You know, most people, the first thing I ever published, it was an article, I'm happy to say that's still being used today, called Why Doesn't First Fire Team Rush? Right? And it was, I mean, people who didn't like it called me stupid, but I didn't trend anywhere. The fact that it's still in circulation, I know it resonated. I just saw it framed here recently in somebody's battalion CP. So I know that it has credibility. But I didn't strike the chord that you struck. And so, I think it's great advice that you give. And doing it in public's a little bit different, you know?
So it is different, but it is different. And it's also still scary though, because I wonder if my opinion that I had when I was 25 years old is going to prevent me one day from being promoted, from picking up command, you know? Because when you see things happen around America, like, hey, this one person wrote an article 40 years ago about why women shouldn't do this, or why, you know, racism exists, or, you know,
let me ask you, did you see the, I mean, I know you did, so I want you to comment on this. There was a guy who was a naval aviator who in the 80s wrote something. He's just a public affairs officer for Boeing and resigned the position.
Yep. Yeah. So that's one example of many. I mean, look what happened with James Webb in, like, you know, an article he wrote 20 years ago or something about women at the Naval Academy and how he didn't agree with it or something. And it like completely crushed his political career. So I do worry about those things, and it actually makes me sad that the American public doesn't have the compassion that I think some of my fellow Marine officers do sometimes in realizing that people can change opinions and they can be a different person, you know, several years later, or opinions can evolve and change over time. And so it does definitely scare me a little that, like, I had this one opinion one time about why women shouldn't do infantry things. And I'm like, is that going to prevent me from ever pinning on 06 10 years from now? Like, if it does, then this isn't the kind of service that I thought it was. And the Marine Corps Gazette, you know, the professional journal for military debate, isn't the safe forum that I want it to be. So it is scary. And I do think about that. And I'm wondering if I have a glass ceiling because of it. I hope not. I hope it's the opposite, that instead people think that I can evolve and change. And I do think deeply about all topics and issues, especially ones that have dramatic impacts on our military that I love. And I don't know. We'll see. I'll check back with me in 10 years and I'll let you know.
It's interesting because I have a bunch of friends that, that have become general officers, and many of them are retired now. Some are still on active duty. And so, you know, there is a question of can you be promoted in the Marine Corps, no matter your gender, and not be a high functioning conformist? Can you function as somebody who's not afraid to question? And I'm not talking about being insubordinate, but I'm talking about to question the party line in an articulate manner in a grown up forum. Can you be promoted and do that? And we were having a discussion. I said, look, I think for the good of the service, there ought to be 10% of people that are, how do I say this? I don't want to use the word contrarians, because that implies I'm contrary just for the hell of it. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people that are not afraid to say, hey, I think that's bullshit. As you get to higher ranks, you see less and less and less of that. And I would argue that our path into an expansion of the ground war in Afghanistan and our path into the war in Iraq, a lot of it was paved by general officers and flag officers who would not put their hand up and say, hey, Secretary Rumsfeld, I think you ripping up the war plan or writing one of your own is a fatal mistake. And I'm not going to be a part of this. And so, but if you don't cultivate that, if we don't reward that behavior, which is being unafraid to dissent in an articulate way, then what you have is, you know, what's called classically groupthink, and that's not mm-hmm. good for an organization. So, I mean, I hope and pray that I don't care if it's you, Lauren, or anybody, that the institution has grown up to say, look, man, we want that kind of thinking. We want that that fearlessness when it comes to, you know, articulate discourse. We need that as an institution. But I'm not sure, if you want my honest opinion, I'm not sure that the institution likes that. And so just a thought.
Yeah, maybe not at this moment. I mean, I think I did it so early on in my career and didn't know what I was doing at the time, too, that maybe I got away with it, or maybe.
So you could plead insanity and throw yourself on the mercy of the court?
Right. No. But I absolutely know where you're coming from and what you're saying there, because it's definitely thoughts I've had. I mean, I'm in the intel field in the Marine Corps. Marine Corps doesn't make general officers from the intel field. Intel creates one general officer like every 4 years. And so you don't join the intel community to be a general officer in the Marine Corps. So I'm never going to be considered for general officer. But, you know, I can't help but think about, like, what if, you know, that were to happen one day, or if I was one of the different services or a different MOS that maybe did promote to general officer, like, would they really not, like, you know, approve of that because of an article that I would have written 20 years before that, 25 years before that? In today's culture, probably.
Yeah, you know, I mean, with the expansion of the whole cancel culture thing, right? It's like that's happening more, not less, in our culture. And so what the hell, man? Just keep writing and burning it down. that's my advice. Is that, let me just tell you, the world needs more of you, not less of you. Okay. And so I tell this to people all the time. Look, if the truth doesn't matter, if you can't stand up in any organization, I don't care what it is, and if you can't tell the truth and you can't have a discussion about it, then why are you even there? That's worthy of your life's work. Give me a break. But I think it's something that everybody's wrestling with, you know?
Oh, yeah. So. That's our culture. And especially in today's culture where, you know, the internet exists. Ugh. Like, we get social media conduct classes about how everything you post online is traceable to you for the rest of your life. And, you know, never post a picture that you don't want your grandkids to see one day. And all of those things create fear in people, that what they do as a 21-year-old is going to have adverse effects on them when they're a 51-year-old, you know? And so, yeah, it's definitely crossed my mind. Not that I ever joined the Marine Corps to be a general officer, or I'm in the MOS to do so. It's just not going to happen for me. But it has crossed my mind that if that were in my future, then did I kill my own future career prospects? Like, man, if that's true, like, that's just really sad, because
sucks.
We need to prevent groupthink. We need to have people that think outside the box. We need to have risk takers. We need to have folks who are willing to shake the core of our bureaucratic system, especially if we're going to get after China, if we're going to get after Russia, if we're going to dominate the information environment, if we're going to, like, really get after this cyber thing, like, in all of these different domains where we need to have creative thinkers. We need to have people that say, hey, I know this is how we've always done things, but maybe it's not the right way to do it. Like, we need to have those people. Like you said, they're not contrarians, they're thinkers. They're risk takers. They're change agents.
The other thing is, they're just commenting on the truth as it is. Do you want to play the Emperor's New Clothes? Do you want to write fairy tales like The Little Engine That Could? Do you want to believe in bullshit, or do you want to look at the world as it is and not be afraid to have an articulate, footnoted, you know, open discussion with people who aren't afraid to get it on in public? What do you want? And I don't think the institution survives without that vigorous debate. And I'll tell you what, Lauren, I see less and less of it. When we get in public, everybody nods their head. Really? Is that what we think now? So that's why I say the world and the Marine Corps doesn't need less of you. You know, it needs more of you. And I believe the Marine Corps ought to promote those who aren't afraid, you know, have a quota for it. Okay, who's our Maverick? Who's our Smedley Butler Award winner here? Right? who is the Pete Ellis? Who's the one that's thinking outside the bun? And where is that 10% in this group? Because, look, we don't need more bobbleheads. We need more, you know, people that think and people that aren't afraid, right, to articulately participate in a discussion and aren't afraid to put their hand up and say, hey, I might be the only one thinking it, but I read 20 minutes of Afghan history last night, and does everybody in this OPT know that what we're talking about doing has never existed? Ever? And that if Germany and Japan were 60 years events, this is probably about 360, what we're talking about trying to do, create a federal Afghanistan? Does everybody understand that? Or, I mean, because I know I didn't go to an Ivy League school. I went to the University of San Diego. But that's my understanding of this. Am I wrong about that shit? And what you would have got was, who is that guy and why is he in here? He obviously, obviously isn't on the team, right? What is he doing throwing reality into our OPT? But those are the places we've gone. And so I don't know that the world needs less of that. I think the world certainly needs more of it. And so anyway, all right.
Well, I agree with you. If I could be anybody, it'd be the next Pete Ellis. So
There you go. Well, I mean, certainly a loudmouth that's not afraid to write. I like that. all right. So what's the next thing you're going to write?
So, I mean, I have a half dozen things that are half written, but I'm really compelled to write the emotional baggage that comes along with being a commander who loses a Marine. And I think that I'm not unique in that situation. Many of us have dealt with that who've been in command the last, you know, several decades or forever. And but it's something you and I had a sidebar conversation before we're on the radio here just about losing Marines and what that does to you emotionally and how you never truly get over that. And even though it's been about 6 months since I lost the Marine under my charge, I think about him every day. And I think about what I could have done differently as a commander and what I could have done not just for him, but for the other Marines in my command and the situation writ large. I'm constantly assessing before, during, and after that crisis. And I can't shake it. So what I'm going to do is write about it.
Well, and again, you won't shake it ever. And they will close the casket on you, and you'll still be thinking about it. And so as we spoke before, I was the beneficiary when, you know, I did the first dance of death that I would do in my life. I was the beneficiary of some incredibly wise advice that my company, Gunny, gave me. I would tell you the best advice I ever got in my life when he looked at me and said, you know, you're never going to get over this. And there's nothing wrong with you when you struggle. And those words have comforted me since then. 27 years next month. It's comforted me through a lot of more traumatic events than the one that happened that day, which was incredibly traumatic, to be honest with you. And so I think that this conversation is important to have because I don't care how old you are in the post-traumatic winning presentation I talk about. Look, this is not just for young people, just so everybody knows this. And I put the story of Vice Admiral Scott Starney, who hung himself in Bahrain. He was the, you know, he was nav sent, for God's sakes. Three-star admiral. Had gone home for Thanksgiving in November of 2018. He and his wife went back to Bahrain. They went for a walk in the morning. She went out to run errands, and he went into his office and hung himself. And he dealt with the guilt of being gone so long and the impact that had on him, on his family, on his marriage. And without saying a word to his wife, but with a long note, he took his own life. And so to me, these are things that, you know, that I think are better done in the open and certainly done, you know, down on the down low, because, you know, we really don't want to talk about this out loud. Bullshit, man. We're all dealing with it, and most of us are faking it. So it's better that we do talk about it. So let me know when you get ready to publish, and you can come back on and continue your role as Auburn Radio favorite major. So no, Lauren, I always enjoy our conversations, and I publicly thank you for introducing me to the USS Johnson. Your grandfather served on the Johnston and was killed in action in World War II. So that story has been an absolute incredible, historical example. When you really want to study courage, take a look at Ernest Evans and the USS Johnston, and not only the first time he turns that ship, but the second time he turns that ship. And the courage that that those sailors behaved with that day. So pretty incredible. So thank you on top of thank you on top of thank you. And thank you again for doing this today.
Thanks, sir. Have a good one.
All right. That is Lauren Serrano. More of Auburn Major Type, United States Marine Corps. The more of Auburn Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.